Well, hi everyone. Such an honor to come to you today in week two of this series on the art of neighboring. You know, I think it makes such a statement to our community that our five churches across nine locations are coming together this month to explore this very important topic. And what an impact we could make on this region if we learned together to love our neighbor as ourselves, like Jesus commanded. I want to give a special greeting this morning to McLean Church. I'm preaching live at your Enbro campus on Sunday morning. Couldn't be more excited to join forces again with you guys this year. We at Grace love and admire your church so much. We love and admire your pastor, Brian and Tavia, and your fantastic ministry teams and ministry leaders. To have built and sustained such a powerful and influential church in this area of our country is a true testament to the hand of God on you and your church and your leaders. And hi to everyone at Grace Church as well. I'm holding it down at McLean this week. And then we'll be hosting Pastor Brian next weekend at Grace. And so we're really looking forward to all of that. Well, last week we noted that Jesus included our capacity to love our neighbors as one of the two most important things we could do as his followers, next to loving God with all of who we are. So if he thought it was that important, I mean, he basically said the whole weight of the scriptures hang on our ability to do this well, then we should certainly take it a little more seriously than we do. We should dwell on it more. We should be more intentional about neighboring well. And in addition to this challenge in Jesus' great commandment, we're also using Dave Runyon's book, The Art of Neighboring, as a resource this month. Dave himself, just as a reminder, will be with us in week four. He'll be preaching to all of our churches in this series. But he's also going to be hosting a special event on Saturday morning, October 27th, for all of us, as we'll take a deeper dive into this subject of neighboring with him personally. You can get more details and register at churchneighbors.com. We'd love for everyone to be there on that Saturday. And last week, we introduced a block map exercise where we asked you to try to name the eight neighbors closest to you. I'm sure some of you extroverts did really well with that assignment, but for the others, it was maybe a proper wake-up call. I had someone come up to me after one service and say, I've lived in my house for 29 years, and I could only name three. And then he said, thanks for the challenge. I've got some more work to do. I think that's the right posture. And learning people's names isn't the last step. It's only the first step. The idea is that in order to love our neighbors, we have to know our neighbors. And so learning a name is just the first step in getting to know a person and understanding maybe their hopes and their dreams and their hurts and their needs. Now, I'm not a big math guy, but if 4,000 people in our five churches each get to know eight neighbors, that's 32,000 households. And potentially like 90 to 100,000 total people when you think of all the people in those households. And so the potential impact here, guys, for the gospel in just this simple exercise is just really, really huge. And so I would challenge you by week four to know eight names. But today I want to talk about what for most is the number one problem in getting to know our neighbors. It's a lack of time. Most of us aren't walking around with all kinds of extra time. We already feel overwhelmed with our schedules. Our relationship space, for example, already feels full. There's no more room for eight people, right? And in our culture, we value production and accomplishment and results. And that kind of culture, many of us are activity rich and relationship poor. It seems like no matter how many time-saving devices that we can invent, our lives stay completely full and busy. We can use a microwave, for example, and what used to take 15 minutes on a stove can be zapped in 60 seconds. We've learned to multitask anything while talking on the phone. I mean, when I was growing up, the closest thing to that was one of my friend's mothers who had this like super long cord on her phone, right, that she could go from room to room picking up the house while talking to a friend. That was the extent of it. But now you could be driving down the highway talking on the phone at the same time as you're answering your emails. And if you're a woman, you can also be simultaneously drinking a latte and applying makeup. I mean, I've seen you ladies. You're like an octopus over there with all those hands. with all these time-saving devices, you'd think we'd have all kinds of extra time. But we still live at warp speed. We certainly don't have time, many would say, for loving our neighbors. And so here's this big idea that I want to challenge us with today. Neighboring requires that you create some space and slow your pace. I mean, if we're going to take one of Jesus' most important commandments seriously, we're going to have to get intentional about it. Because the biggest obstacle to taking the great commandment seriously is time. And this is critical, not just for our neighbors, but for our own faith. John Ortberg said it this way. He said, "For most Christians, the great danger is not that we will renounce our faith. It is that we will become so distracted and rushed and preoccupied that we will settle for a mediocre version of it, and that we'll just skim our lives instead of actually living them." The Bible confirms that our time is short. James 4:14 says it this way. He says, "What is your life? For you are a mist that appears for a little time and then vanishes." Last Sunday, I don't know if you were paying attention, but it was foggy around here. But the thing about a mist or a fog like that is that it's here 1 minute and then it's gone the next. Mists don't hang around very long. And that's what the Bible says our lives are like. I mean, on average, you and I will have about 28,835 days. That's the lifespan of the average American, just over 78 years. I mean, I've hit 17,500. That means that I'm over halfway done with mine. And to put it in hourglass terms, the sand in the bottom has overtaken the sand on the top. I have about 11,000 days left, if I'm lucky. 11,000 days to know and love my wife. 11,000 days to be a great influence on my kids. 11,000 days to make a mark on this world that really matters. And so you have, you know, if you're 24, you have like 20,000 days left, which sounds like a lot. The problem is you're going to blink and you're going to be 47 like me, and you're going to blink again and you're going to be 56, and you're going to think, man, this went really fast. Time is short. And here's the thing about time. Wouldn't we want to use our time the way Jesus would want us to use it? And so if he says the two most critical uses of our time are to love God and to love our neighbors, shouldn't we prioritize those two things first in our busy schedules? I want you to see an example from the scriptures of a time that someone needed to create some space and slow their pace for what was most important. So we're going to look at Luke 10, 38 to 42 today. If you have a Bible or a device, I would love for you to turn there with me. It's a familiar story of Mary and Martha, and they're welcoming Jesus into their home. He's their friend. And we often look at this story through the lens of Mary choosing to spend time with Jesus as God. And the lesson is, spend more time with God. And obviously, this is true. But there's an element of this story where Jesus is also kind of a neighbor. He's a friend to this family. He's a visitor whom they're showing hospitality to in their house. And so I think there's some lessons about neighboring well. The two sisters and their brother, Lazarus, would often welcome Jesus and share meals with him when he was in town. And so we're going to look at Luke 10, 38 through the lens of neighboring. Let me read it. It says, "Now as they went on their way, Jesus entered a village, and a woman named Martha welcomed him into her house. And she had a sister called Mary, who sat at the Lord's feet and listened to his teaching. But Martha was distracted with much serving, and she went up to him and said, 'Lord, do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? Tell her then to help me.' But the Lord answered her, 'Martha, Martha, you are anxious and troubled about many things, but one thing is necessary. Mary has chosen the good portion, which will not be taken away from her.'" All right, so we're going to draw today three lessons about neighboring from Mary and Martha in this text. Here's the first lesson I want you to see. Don't let distractions keep you from focusing on people. Notice in verse 38 that Martha got off to a good start. She welcomed him into her house. You see that? But by verse 40, it says that she had become distracted. And so if you're taking notes today, just underline that word distracted and write "focus on Jesus" in the margin. She was distracted from her guest. This happens to the best of us, doesn't it? I mean, thinking about this from a neighboring perspective, many of us start off with the right intentions. We'll say to our spouse, "You know, honey, you know, we need to have those new neighbors over to the house sometime." And she'll be like, "Yeah, great idea. But let's do it after I get done with this project at work. I'm too distracted right now." And you're like, "Yeah, we should probably make sure I get the yard in shape first and get the shrubs trimmed." And she says, "Oh, yeah, and we haven't gotten all the summer stuff into winter storage yet, and we should probably finish painting the bathroom before we have them over." And before we know it, a bunch of distractions have blinded us to the actual people that God has placed in our path. How many of you know that hospitality doesn't depend on the cleanliness of your house? I mean, I've sat in plenty of messy living rooms and still felt completely overwhelmed by love and care and attention. It's because the person wasn't distracted by all their stuff that they hadn't done. They were focused on the person right in front of them. This is part of being a good neighbor. And I want to be clear here about something in this text, because we often misinterpret it. Martha's mistake in this passage wasn't the much serving part. It was the fact that she'd become distracted by it. some people read this and they try to say, you know, see, Jesus is against us doing things for him, and he just wants us to be. And there's some truth in this. We need to build in times into our lives where we can just Sabbath and where we can just be with Jesus. However, there are a lot of little pesky passages in the Bible where Jesus talks about the value of doing. He often told stories about workers, and one of them is this. There's these high achievers in the story who get commended, and the laid-back passive guy is called wicked and lazy, right? In Matthew 28, Jesus tells a story where a father says to his two sons, you know, go to work in my vineyard. And there's a son who decides, I don't want to work. Work is doing. I just want to be, bro. It's like he's from Southern California. And that son doesn't fare too well in Jesus' story. In fact, the passage right before this one in Luke 10 that we talked about last week, the story of the Good Samaritan, the one who did the hard work of compassion is the hero. And those who chose not to get involved were the villains. And so the issue is not just being versus doing. The issue is that Martha had become distracted from focusing on the person who was in her home, Jesus, who was right in front of her. And we can see later that it leads her to being anxious and troubled. You can see that down in verse 41. She just gets burned out. And then she starts whining. She says, Lord, you don't care about that my sister's left me to serve all alone? You know, this is good old-fashioned tattletaling from grown adults. You can tell they're sisters. See, when we get distracted by a bunch of stuff that Jesus didn't ask us to do, it always leads to frustration and anxiety. And some of you are burned out, and you're frustrated. You're doing a bunch of stuff that Jesus didn't ask you to do in the first place. But he did ask you to love your neighbor. And so there comes a time where you have to say no to the things that he didn't ask you to do and say yes to the things that he did. And so let me ask you this. What are the distractions that have crept into your life that are keeping you from loving your neighbor well? Where do you need to eliminate distraction so that you can focus on people? That's our first lesson on neighboring from this story. Here's the second. Is that the biggest barrier to good neighboring is not time, it's priorities. Now, I know this sounds like it contradicts my sermon title, but I think the text leads us down this road. So stay with me for a second. Time is a concern, but our priorities drive how we spend our time, whether we like it or not. So show me your calendar, and I'll show you your priorities, which means when we say, I don't have time to get to know my neighbor, what we're really saying is, I don't consider getting to know my neighbor as important as everything else I do. And I think Jesus might take issue with that assessment. It would be wise for us to prioritize what Jesus told us to prioritize. And loving your neighbors is on that short priority list. Remember, Martha starts this whining to Jesus that Mary's not helping with all the arrangements. And Jesus responds to her with a challenge to prioritize. Look at what he says in verse 41. He says, Martha, Martha, you are anxious and troubled about many things. And then the first words of verse 42 are key. He says, but one thing is necessary. If you're taking notes today, you could just circle the words many things and connect it to the word one thing and just write priorities in the margin. That's what he's talking about here. He's saying that as a follower of Jesus, there are many things that you could be doing, but you need to get to the most important thing, the one thing. You need to prioritize. And so often we just get swept away in the avalanche of activities. And if you're not careful, you'll end up scheduling your life around demands rather than priorities. We grab our calendars and the first things to go in are the places we need to be to avoid losing our jobs. That's fine. And in the process, we can't forget about the kids' travel teams and the kids' social lives and the kids' school calendars. And there's PTA, and there's getting to the gym, and there's not missing my favorite show and my social media time. And with any luck, there's still room to squeeze in some sleep, maybe a shower, a meal or two would be great. At the end of a good day, you've made all your appointments, you've crossed everything off your list, you fall into bed and you pray, God, help me to pull this off again tomorrow. But there's a better way. What if we didn't just let all the urgent stuff, the many things, drive our schedules, but instead we let our priorities, the one thing, lead the way? Remember this guy on the screen here, Curly from City Slickers? He was this, I'm aging myself, he was this mysterious figure who said, remember, the key to life, he said, is one thing. And once you figure out your one thing and you stick to it, everything else falls and takes a back seat. I'm paraphrasing the last part. So what's your one thing? What are your four or five most important things? Because priorities drive behaviors. And so what if you got intentional about putting the priorities in your schedule first? Choose the one thing over the many things. And so if time with God is important, if a thriving marriage is important, if loving relationships are important, like neighboring, then they need to go into the calendar before all the urgent, immediate stuff moves them out. I want to show you an illustration that I think originated with Stephen Covey. It's been used many times, many other settings, but it applies perfectly here in this setting. It illustrates our need to have our top priorities in place first. This vase represent kind of our limited time. We all get the same amount of time. Nobody gets any more, nobody gets any less. And these little small pebbles of gravel in here represent all the little things that we need to do every day, the tasks of life, the urgent stuff, having breakfast, stopping at Starbucks, driving the kids around, watching The Price is Right, Snapchatting friends, all the mundane stuff that fills up our days. That's represented by each of these little pebbles. And these bigger, we pretend they're rocks, they're actually wiffle balls. These bigger rocks are the important stuff. And maybe there's five important things to you. Maybe it's God and your marriage and your parenting and your health, you know, those sorts of things. And so you hear about these priorities. Your day is kind of already filling up with all this little stuff. And you're looking at this going, well, I just can't fit more stuff in my day. Something has to go. And so you try to cram in these important things, your time with God, your time with your spouse and your kids, and pretty soon you've got other priorities, but they just don't fit in this limited time. And so the illustration shows us that the only way to fit all of this in is to put the big rocks in first. So we put these five things in first. You know, the Bible says this, he says, if you seek first my kingdom and my righteousness, then all the other things will be added unto you. You won't have to worry in life because it's all going to fit. The only way all the important stuff fits in our limited amount of time is that if we put the big important stuff in first. We schedule it first. It's the same time, it's the same amount of stuff, but only the big stuff went in first. What are your priorities? What do you need to start with? And what if you started with your priorities today? You said, I'm gonna put the big rocks in first so that it all fits. Seek first my kingdom and my righteousness, and all these other things will be added to you. Listen, I know that this can be a source of guilt and shame for people. Like when we get it wrong with our family or with God, we get to the end of the week and we realize we haven't spent proper time, or even with our neighbors. We can just hang our heads in shame and heap guilt upon ourselves. Man, especially you moms. I've never met a group of heroes who are so hard on themselves as moms. But that's not the point here. Back to the story. How do you imagine Jesus' tone with Martha? When he says, Martha, Martha, right? You got all this anxiety going on. Some people imagine it as a shaming tone. But when you repeat a name like that, in ancient culture, it was also often used as kind of a loving, playful tone. This isn't Jesus saying, shame on you, Martha. Stop doing that, Martha. And she comes to remember, she's like, I've baked 6 dozen cookies in preparation for your visit. I dusted the mantle. I've cleaned all the toilets twice, and I hate cleaning toilets. And so she starts complaining, and Jesus begins to draw her out in a very gentle way. He's saying, Martha, Martha, you're amazing. You have this amazing energy. But I want us to refocus that energy toward the most important things. He's not trying to add another thing to her to-do list so she can check off sitting at Jesus' feet. He's making an invitation into relationship. He's saying, slow down, prioritize. And I would ask you, do you live at a pace that allows you to prioritize your neighbors? Because the starting place for good neighboring is not time, it's priorities. That's the second lesson from the story. Here's the third, and it's similar. It's to stop doing only what's immediate so you can do what's important. Martha was focused on the immediate. Mary was focused on the important. Down in verse 42, Jesus says, Mary has chosen the good portion. I just want you to underline that little word and write, choose important over immediate in the margin. And it is a choice. He said, Mary has chosen the good portion. He's using this mealtime language for Martha, right? She was preparing a meal in the kitchen. And he's saying, wow, look at those portions that you're preparing, Martha. Martha, I know you're getting that big portion of chicken ready for me, and it sure looks yummy. But even better than that portion of food is the portion that Mary has chosen in here. She's spending time with me. He is our good portion. Getting dinner on the table was the immediate. The relationship with Jesus was the important. And we have to get better at keeping our eye on what's important. Because when you look at the ministry of Jesus, he was masterful at this. He was a busy man. Can we all agree that Jesus had the most important schedule in history? I mean, rescuing the world from their sin is pretty high up there. But I want you to flip over to a passage in Matthew, just back a couple books, Matthew 20, that's going to illustrate my point. I'm actually going to start in verse 29. It says, and as they went out of Jericho, a great crowd followed him. And behold, there were two blind men sitting by the roadside. And when they heard that Jesus was passing by, they cried out, Lord, have mercy on us, son of David. And the crowd rebuked them, telling them to be silent. But they cried out all the more, Lord, have mercy on us, son of David. And stopping, Jesus called to them and said, what do you want me to do for you? They said to him, Lord, let our eyes be opened. And Jesus, in pity, touched their eyes. And immediately they recovered their sight and followed him. Now, there's a profound word in this passage that I don't want you to miss. It's right there toward the beginning of verse 32. It's the word stopping. Some versions say Jesus stopped. I would love for you just to underline or circle that word and write stop for what's important. Jesus stopped. Jesus stopped. He had the craziest schedule in history and he stopped. And it's not just here that we see it. Again and again in his ministry, Jesus stopped. He was interruptible. And I think as followers of Jesus in a very busy world, we need to get better at being interrupted. Most of Jesus' ministry, most of Jesus' miracles were interruptions. Think about it. All the people that he healed, the blind man, the lame man, the sick people, the paralyzed man, the dead child, all of them were interruptions. His first miracle, interrupted at a wedding. His second miracle, interrupted on the way to Galilee. It says Jesus stopped. And we talk about following the steps of Jesus. We should also follow the stops of Jesus, especially in our neighborhood. But you say, yeah, but I'm cooking dinner. Yeah, but that neighbor that's walking by, her mom just passed away and she could probably use a caring conversation. Yeah, but I'm mowing my lawn. Yeah, but that neighbor that just pulled in right next to you who just moved into that house could probably use a welcome to the neighborhood. But I'm just pulling out of the garage to go to the bank. Yes, and there's that elderly neighbor who's trying to empty his groceries out of his car who could probably use a hand. Immediate or important? And so what would this look like in your context? What would it mean to create some time and space in your life to be a better neighbor? Remember, our big idea said it this way, that neighboring requires that you create some space and slow your pace to stop what keeps us so crazy busy and be there for people. Loving your neighbor as you love yourself, it's not going to happen without some intentionality. Now, we learned some lessons today from this text. We have to be mindful of our distractions in our lives that would keep us from focusing on people. We learn that time isn't the main barrier when it comes to loving our neighbors. The main barrier is improper priorities. And finally, we learn that sometimes we need to stop the immediate things that we're doing in order to do what's important. And I want to share a quick story with you that I think illustrates all three of these. About 10 years ago, my son Chase was 8 years old, and he was involved in youth hockey. And Chase had always been our really kind of outgoing relational kid. So Chase had hockey camp at Mercyhurst one summer, and he had to be there on the ice, ready to go at 8 a.m. each day for a week. And Mercyhurst is on the opposite side of town from our house, and there was a whole kind of equipment routine that we had to go through. So if you know kids hockey, you know that an 8 o'clock ice time on the other side of town means that you probably need to get up no later than about 4 in the morning to start getting ready for this, right? Breakfast and weeding through that smelly, smelly, terrible bag to make sure everything's in there and in working order. There's extra clothes, there's extra snacks, right? It's a whole production. So the first couple days of the week, I thought we had the perfect rhythm. The rest of the kids in this camp would arrive around 7:30. They'd get dressed in the locker room. They'd come out on the ice right around 8 o'clock, but not us. The Sanfords are efficient. So we got all the gear on at home. And then we'd arrive at the ice about 7:57, just in time to sit on the bleachers, put on the skates, put on the helmet, and skate out onto the ice at the exact same time that all the other kids were exiting the locker room on the other side of the ice and coming on as well. And then I'd be on my way. A model of efficiency. Now, this worked with my busy schedule. It was perfectly choreographed. But after a couple days of this, Chase looked at me and he asked if we could change up the routine. If we could get there earlier, like at 7:30, so that he could get ready in the locker room with the other kids. Now, I was willing, but my efficient sensibilities were a little offended. Sure, I said to Chase, but what's the problem with our system? You're not missing a single thing. You're getting on the ice at the exact same time as everyone else. In fact, it's all timed perfectly. And he looked back at me with his big, beautiful eyes and he said, I know, Dad, I do get there on time. But earlier in the locker room is the only chance I might have to make some new friends. I had my eyes on the immediate. He had his eyes on the important. I was worried about time. He was worried about the priorities. I was distracted by all the details. He was focused on the people. And it simply took an intentional decision for the rest of the week to get there a little earlier, to put him in the right position, in the right environment, to meet some new people, and hopefully show them the love and acceptance of God through our Christian family. And so the next step that I want to challenge you with this week, it'll take some intentionality, just a little bit. It'll take all that we've learned today, it'll put it in one simple, actionable step. And here's the step. I want to challenge you to schedule at least 1 hour this week in a space that positions you to interact with your neighbors. Now, that might mean just planning to spend an hour out in your front yard or your front porch during the time of the day that might bring the most foot traffic in your direction or in the common area of your apartment complex. It might mean taking a walk, not just for exercise, but to meet and to interact with some people as you go. If you've already met a neighbor and you'd like to spend a little bit more time getting to know them, maybe invite them to coffee or for a cookout at your place. If you're aware of a need in your neighborhood, meet it. If somebody just had surgery, take them a meal. If someone's struggling to keep up with their weeding, offer to help. If a young mom needs an hour break, to just offer to watch the kids. If someone's spouse is out of town, take them a Starbucks gift card. Offer them to get out of the house for an hour, whatever it is. And at the same time, we're kind of planning this hour. Please don't forget about your block map in the process. Get to know that those first and last names of the eight neighbors closest to you. And if you're still getting to know names, focus your hour this week around that. And if you know the names pretty well, take the next step with your hour of scheduling some time to get together or meeting a need. But schedule at least 1 hour this week to intentionally position yourself to interact with your neighbors. And guys, I know we're all busy. I know we think time is the barrier, but we spend time on what's most important to us. And we must redeem some of the time for things that are important to our Savior. And so in our remaining minutes here, I'd encourage you to jot down the idea that just popped into your head as I challenged you to spend an hour. And for extra credit, for you model students, before you forget, actually take out your phone and put it in your calendar. Redeem some time this week to do God's will in your neighborhood. And I just want to close with this scripture from Ephesians 5, 15 through 17. Paul says this, he says, therefore, be careful how you walk, not as unwise men, but as wise, making the most of your time, because the days are evil. So then do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. So yes, when it comes to neighboring, time can be a barrier. But Paul says here that it's possible as a Christian to make the most of your time. Literally, it means to redeem or buy back your time. And notice the phrases that he uses to describe what it will take to buy back our time, to use our time well. He says, be careful. He says, be wise. He says, understand God's will. That's what it will take. Spiritual intentionality. Here's what I can promise you. I promise that God does not want you to be so exhausted, so distracted, so focused on the media, so overscheduled that you're depleted and wasted and angry to the point that you're not able to do the two things that Jesus said were most important in this life, to love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and to love your neighbor as yourself. So this week, will you make an hour to intentionally show love to your neighbors, not your theoretical neighbors, but your actual ones. God bless you. It was such an honor to be with you today.